Welcome back to another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. This is episode 27. Well, guys, it has been a hot minute since I released an episode. I lost three loved ones within the last few months, and I needed a timeout. I needed some time to regroup and reassess where my life and intentions were headed. And after some much-needed rest, leaning into grief for what and whom I have lost, praise for their lives, and a new appreciation for my own, I'm finally ready to dip my toes back into this crazy technological and modern jungle. Moving forward, my soul will remain indigenous and wild, with careful attention and intention in all that I do and create. It takes some real awareness and dedication to not get lost in the hustle and grind and the conditioning of me, 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 and achieve, 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 which, you know, when someone passes, puts a lot into perspective. With that being said, there's nothing to chase when your heart beats with passion for what you do. And for me, so much joy comes from being in service to others, such as offering this podcast to lovely people like yourself. Speaking of service, today I sit down with the powerful Caitlin Howe. Caitlin is a writer, personal transformation coach for the Aubrey Marcus Fit for Service Fellowship Program, and an intuitive experiential facilitator for practices such as ecstatic dance, breathwork, meditation, and kundalini yoga. Her areas of focus include shadow work, divine feminine healing, and authentic embodiment. With a dynamic history of tested life experiences, overcoming her own struggles through various modalities of self-healing, mentorship, and plant medicine journeys, Caitlin is passionate about supporting others in radical self-expression, overcoming shame, finding unity through community, and reclaiming a sense of individual wholeness for greater collective harmony. From what we should be, you can't see my air quotes, but should be, to playing with what and who we want to be, Caitlin and I discuss how to find your edge, moving through the stories we have told ourselves and the stories we often tell each other through societal conditioning. An exploration of the shadow archetypes that exist within each of us, this conversation empowers you to reclaim your right to full self-expression and ultimately take back your freedom. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do me a solid. Be sure to follow, like, subscribe, and or leave a review. Not only will this keep you up to date with new episodes, but it will also help important conversations like this one reach those that need to hear them. All right, here we go. Dancer skirts are like ding 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 ding.
It's all coins. Yeah, exactly. It's so fun though. You know, I think a lot of my passion sparked with my passion for music festivals, but really I love music. I love gatherings. I love community experience. But what I love most about them is that people show up and give themselves permission to put on some full expression of some part of themselves that they normally suppress in day-to-day life. And it's this like big permission slip for everybody there to really let something out that's always kind of bottled up inside. And that always spoke to me because I have a lot going on in here that I suppressed for most of my life. So it's become, you know, one of my favorite outlets of creativity is to dress up and allow whatever personality or archetype or expression of the goddess or the masculine as well, actually, to come through and take the stage for a while, because we have so much inside of us that does not seem to have a place to stand in our ordinary day-to-day life.
See, and when you said about the masculine, my mind immediately goes to a fake mustache.
Oh yeah. I love a fake mustache. I think for a lot of us women, you know, I see this a lot with men because I love to help people dress up too. It's one of my just personal passions outside of any work that I do is I love helping people get into their creativity with their expression, you know, through what they're wearing or how they're showing up. And I love seeing how excited men get to do some of these things that usually the women get to do. And, you know, even if that's wearing makeup or a whole woman's outfit, it's like, they don't get to have, you know, the skirts and the wigs and the makeup and all this stuff. And so I love that because I see them light up, even if they're like, no, I don't want to. And on the flip side of that, women don't often give themselves permission to, you know, for one, we can't grow facial hair. So the fake mustache is
love
really
us can. Exciting.
Well, not enough of it. not enough of it to really rock the mustache and beard look. So, yeah, I love doing that occasionally when I get the opportunity to. It's just fun, you know. We all want to try on the other identity every now and then.
It's so true. I know. I think like when we're young, like we get to dress up so much and play, and then you kind of lose that because I think society kind of like contains us through these roles. And I was also going to say, like, I usually do a countdown before like getting into the podcast, but like, I feel like I'm happy where this is already going. If you are, we can just keep going.
Oh yeah. Let's go for it. Sure. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Well, that's such a good point. Like, I think expression and being able to, you know, kind of just like let yourself be however you want to be. Cause in each moment, you're never really the same person anyways. And we have so many different sides of us. And I know that something I've been kind of working on myself is like this limited frame we put ourselves in of like, I have to be a certain way and that's how I need to present myself to the world. And I feel like it's so limiting. And when are you ever just, you know, the partner or the, whatever your profession is, like, you know, or the, you know, playful child, you know, and then like, how do you go back and forth and not get so stuck on one thing? So then it's like, okay, maybe I can be, you know, innocent and playful, but then I can be like, you know, oomph, like powerful, sexy goddess vibe, you know?
Yes, totally. You know, we're very confined by our concepts of what is acceptable and what we should be. Like, should is such a dangerous word. Mm-hmm. You know, we have all of these constructs around how a woman should be, how a man should be, how we should be in the workplace, how we should be, you know, say we're on a podcast or we're hosting a podcast or we are, you know, in our profession or we are with our partner. And we get so trapped by that. And at the same time, it's sort of this grand illusion that we aren't flowing in and out of, you know, identities moment to moment all the time. It's just not really conscious. Like we're actually, you know, like you spoke of the playful child or the partner or whatever, or the mother or the, you know, the sexual vixen, we turn those on sometimes when we give ourselves permission, regardless of a costume or an outfit. It's like the way we express in the world is this sort of like this aperture through which all of these different expressions of the vastness of who we are gets to show up when it feels like it's appropriate or when it feels called to. And I feel, you know, I feel like with more consciousness of that and more awareness of that, we get to kind of play with allowing ourselves to be what we want to be instead of what we should be. And it takes a little bit of tracking because, you know, these things are called forward by our environment. So we cue off the environment as to what we want to be. And we lose some of our sovereignty with that. And it's also very human and it's okay, but we're really limited by should. And when we can let go of should, we get to ask ourselves, okay, what do I want to be right now? And what's really true for me right now? Maybe I want to be more expressive, more sexual, more, you know, or more subdued even, than we feel like we have to be. And so it's really interesting to track the places where we've shushed parts of ourselves and suppressed parts of ourselves and limited ourselves through shame about what's not appropriate. And we get to reclaim some of that as we start to come back online and pay attention to how we show up in different environments and what we really want.
Yeah. I would say there's two things that came up when listening to you speak. One is, you know, you were saying about our environments dictating to us and shaming us and kind of containing us. And that is one of the beautiful things about going to a music festival, because it's like a giant playground for adults where you're like, you know, it's like, let's skip and hop to the next place, because walking is for normies.
Oh my God. Yes.
Whereas like in, you know, in real life, if you were just like, I'm going to skip down the aisle to get my groceries, people be like, this person for sure is having a manic episode or something. But when you're at a giant playground and you're exploring, it's kind of like for the first time you look around and you're like, wow, like people are so beautiful when they come out of their shell and express themselves. And it was funny. I saw my partner do that. We went to a music festival. And he's like a metal guy. He's a professional musician, tattoos, like I'm talking metal. And I brought him to a festival he'd never been before. And there were some activities that happened, and it was so fun to see him dress up. I have this like faux fur sort of like neck thing. That was actually something else I was thinking of wearing. I was like, ooh, maybe I could be like my shadow expression today of like the goddess. But anyways, I was like, I never wear this sequins. But I gave him that, and then we found him this like gold chain. It was like plastic, but the like plastic gold chain with a giant dollar sign on it. And then all of a sudden the night's kind of going on, and he's just like, and like, he's not a dancer either. And he's just all like, the music's really good. Like, this is really awesome. Cause you like look around and you start seeing like, nobody cares. Yeah. People are just so friendly. People love seeing somebody else in that full, like expansive state of just like, you know, we're all just jiving together, and nobody's looking at you and judging you the way that people do out in the real world, which I personally think comes from, you know, at least when I'm judgmental, it's because I'm feeling like crap about myself. And then, you know, that, you know, so that was the thing that definitely came up when you were talking.
I love that you brought that up too, because just for one, we are very perceptive people. So it's kind of a big ask to say, you know, we should just express the way we want to, because we have this superpower where we can actually feel when someone else is judging you. And we have this even more difficult superpower, which is we can project onto other people what we're feeling about ourselves. And so it's a very real felt experience when you feel, whether you're creating it or you're sensing it, when you feel like somebody's judging you. So, you know, there's a big inhibition there, because we naturally, there's a big deep root fear of human beings, of humiliation. And when I dropped into that, I started to name humiliation as one of my great fears about a year ago. And I had never really recognized that. I was doing some work with a text called The Interior Castle. It's an old mystic text by Saint Teresa of Avila, but she talks about one of the obstacles with the soul being humiliation, because as human beings, we actually, you know, we are tribal creatures, and there's a real evolutionary value in avoiding humiliation, because then you're not ostracized from your tribe. But at this point in where we're at as a collective, we're holding on to that imprint, but there's all this permission to be in our individuality and to be in this radical expression of the vast divinity that we are. So we have to become conscious of that and track it and see where it's inhibiting us. But when we are in this space where we feel free of that fear of humiliation from the judgment of other people, we get to discover more of who we are. And it's actually who we are. And we've just never gotten to really connect to that because we've been avoiding humiliation left and right for our entire lives. And it runs so deep. And it's one of the things I love. I guide ecstatic dance. It's my, dare I say, my greatest passion. I'm not sure. I also really love a lot of other things and writing and so forth. But one of the things I love about it is, when I lead it, and typically when it's done, it's certainly done with substances as well, but it's often one of the most beautiful healing components of it is when you move through ecstatic dance sober, you get to find your edges where you're like not using a substance to free yourself of inhibition and realizing, okay, I'm constricted here. I'm afraid of this. And all those stories, you know, like you said about your partner, like he doesn't typically dance, you know, so many people, and especially men, feel like live this story that I can't dance, or I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to dress up or whatever. And so when we can put ourselves in containers where there's really, you know, this playground, like you said, where there's this playground where you're not sensing and projecting the judgment that you typically do in the ordinary world, so to speak, so much of more of who you are comes through. And it's so beautiful to see in an ecstatic dance container, because it's this intentional, I'm going to work with this constriction in my body, and I'm going to move through it and somatically release it as I use movement to, you know, as this catharsis to this suppression that I've been holding all of my life.
Yeah. Dance has been used for like probably since the beginning of time as, exactly that. It's a way to move energy. And I think there's a couple of things that I thought of. You know, one is that for a lot of us, dance has become this sexualized thing, like a lot of things in our culture. So actually at music festivals, I have this incognito mode. I was with some friends this past summer and I hadn't been to a festival in a long time. They're like, Shanti, where'd she go? I can't see her because it's dark. I love the like really big hoods and the like masking up. And I'm just like, yeah, you're like moving with me already. Cause it's like, you know, that was a way for me to almost like energetically shut out unwanted attention, because I love moving my body and I love moving my hips. But like, if I'm just like this hooded figure and you don't see what's underneath that, you know, and there's also ways that you can also energetically flow to kind of put out like a, you know, that barrier as well. Anyways, I totally took a sidestep and got excited about talking about that. And I was like, oh, now I don't remember where I was going. But like the overly sexualized, you know, part of movement and dance, I think, or feeling like you need to impress people. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why people don't do it. And it's like anyone can, you know, anyone can move your body. So what I said to my partner, I actually guided an ecstatic dance this past summer as well. And I just told everybody, like, don't think about it, like allow the music to just move you rather than trying to think of how I can move to the music. It's like, let the music move you instead.
Yeah. Naps, girl. That's where it's at. You know, that is where it's at. 100%. I love that. And I think you really struck something there with the inhibition. I mean, it's so fascinating how much this idea of being sexy or the feeling of being sexualized in your sexy expression inhibits us. And it inhibits us if we have the story that we aren't sexy or that we can't be sexual. And it inhibits us if our true expression is sexual and it feels like it's calling in a certain type of attention. And whether that's, you know, somebody, the attention of pursuit, you know, there's a lot of these concepts that if a woman moves a certain way, she's asking for something. Mm-hmm. And that can really put, you know, a constraint in the body where you're like, man, I'd really love to move this certain way. That feels true for me. That's where the music is moving me, mm-hmm. but I don't want that kind of attention. So I'm going to I'm going to judge myself and say no. Mm-hmm. Or there can be, you know, the flip side of that coin, which is, I feel like I have to be sexy, but my story is that I'm not. And so I'm just going to stand here and let other people take the floor. And I love what you invited your group to do, because there's so many different ways to move. And for me, myself, you know, I think a lot of, to get into a little bit of my backstory, when I was younger, I was incredibly shy, which is, I feel myself now and I'm like, wow, this has been, from the little girl that I was to the woman that I am, has been such a huge transformation. Because I was just paralyzed by shyness, which is, you know, essentially shame. It's like a shame of just being. I'm ashamed to be seen. I'm ashamed of what I am. And the way I overcame that was becoming sexually attractive, getting that positive feedback from my environment that was like, you're pretty. So it was a lot of makeup. It was a lot of, how do I kind of embody this thing that helps me feel confident, because I don't feel confident in who I am. And in addition to that, to, you know, navigate my inhibition that I held naturally, I turned a lot to substance, you know, it was like alcohol and other things, so I could get out of the discomfort I felt in myself and be who I really was and express who I really, as who I really was. But that was masked over with, you know, what do other people like? Well, they like me to be pretty. They like me to be sexy. They like me to be X, Y, and Z. So it became this really intricate, you know, survival mechanism, really, which was like, I don't feel like I can survive in my essence. I have to find these other tools to cope and put on this big mask. And that actually helped me gain confidence. But then at a certain point, that positive return started to turn into addictive behavior and loss of self. Like, I didn't really have a true sense of who I was because I was so oriented towards feeling the positive feedback from my environment, to where I couldn't distinguish what was really me and what was me performing. And so when I started getting into these practices that are more, you know, conscious, so to speak, you know, not involving substances, tapping into that true expression, where it was like, okay, I have to kind of track when I'm performing, when I'm dancing, and when I'm really allowing the music to guide my body. And a lot of that was, you know, giving myself permission to do really goofy shit and like get all funky and not
chicken arms,
chicken arms,
crumping
chicken legs. Yeah. And so that was like a big turning point for me. It was like letting go of, I can do the sexy dance, but I, you know, now how weird can I get, and how much can I do it all the time where it's not me doing it for anybody else? It's because I feel like doing it, you know,
spectrum, the weird spectrum. I have a really vast weird spectrum.
I love that.
Yeah. You know, it's so true. Sometimes when that bass hits and it's like really kind of dirty, you're like, I want to tribal stomp the shit out of the ground right now, because mm-hmm. that's what wants to come out. And then the music will kind of like, you'll get some female vocals and it's very like sensual. And then, you know, then it can be like psy trance where you just like, there's so many different ways that you can move that through you. And yeah, like, I love what you said about checking and observing, am I doing this right now as a performative, like, am I a dancer, which implies I am being seen, or am I just the dance? Am I a part of the dance? Yeah, it's interesting that this conversation is even going towards that, kind of quite naturally with, you know, expressing your, different internal powers, one of them being sexual, but how repressed it is for so many of us because of that shame. And I know in my early years, I also learned, you know, be pretty, You hear a lot of disparaging comments like, oh, thank God you're pretty. And, you know, they're there, Barbie doll, like this kind of stuff. And you learn pretty young nowadays. And I think even more so now for girls growing up, oh my gosh, that the most important thing in life is to be the sex symbol and to be beautiful. But the thing that I noticed over the last few years, so I had worked in, you know, I had actually worked in the industry of being, you know, bartender, server. I was an exotic dancer at one point, like I've done it all. And so the thing is that when I had my car accident a few years ago and, I was forced to go within myself and I couldn't be those things anymore. I really had to see like, wow, so much of my confidence was external and it came from the validation that I got on a regular basis in those industries. And when I took that away, I really had to sift through what was going on inside. Cause there's a lot there. And I know I'm not the only person that feels this way. This is like a, I think this is pretty universal for most of us right now. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, I mean, I think it's true for everyone. We have these ideas of who we should be and what we should be. And for women, undoubtedly, so much of that is wrapped up in how we look and how we are received by our communities. And, you know, I'd say for men, there's a lot to generalize vastly, obviously, but to generalize, there's a lot that's, you know, success and also social validation and kind of different frequencies of that. But when we really do those reality checks, you know, I was in a life-threatening car accident myself. This was a long time ago, 2005, where I've had a couple checked moments in my life, which really took away all of those crutches I was using to maybe, you know, I want to say go the easy route of using that kind of superficial means to survive. And you really wake up and go, okay, if I took away all of this and all of this and so forth, you know, what is really making me happy right now? And how can I live more in what is making me happy? And does it rely on what other people think of me? And does it rely on how I look? And if it does, that is not sustainable for a world that's impossible to control and a body that is temporary. And, you know, how can I fall more in love with the way that, you know, with my essence, with the way that it feels to be me and with the parts of me that cannot be changed and really celebrate them and live them. I think I would still love to dress up, you know, like you said earlier, these are ways of putting visual expressions on energies and goddess archetypes and expressions of all these different that spectrum of weird, the spectrum of the goddess, all of that's inside of us anyway, whether or not we depict it in something that we're wearing. So it's still something that I love. Like I can feel that the way I express is true to me at this point. But it's taken a lot of work because that was not always the case, you know, in certain environments. And it absolutely is true that sometimes it takes those really scary wake up calls to kind of check in with yourself and go, okay, am I living in alignment with what is really making me fulfilled and not making me feel a little bit safer in a world that I can't control?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also that expression of, you know, your sexual power as well. I feel how often that gets shamed by partners because they don't know how to, you know, it's threatening for them. It's threatening because A, you might at some point, you know, go away and they can't have you anymore, which is a form of possession and insecurity and lots of other things. But it's like, that stuff gets projected by other people or like your parents or your culture, depending on where you're from as well. And so what I have been really trying to, I guess, navigate, and I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on this, is how, so we've kind of talked about how there is that aspect of almost like sexual objectification of ourself and our culture kind of encouraging that and kind of glorifying it. But how can we move into like true ownership of that? Because it is a power, and not, you know, and like work through the shame. So there doesn't have to be that disconnect. And like, what is sexual power to you? Because it's not always, in my mind, just about sex.
You know, sexual energy, I think, for one, and I mean, I'll be very honest, I think I still have a long way to go, just in the immensity of what sexual energy actually is, like really cultivating a relationship with the power that is inside of me. And I think, you know, I think for one, fundamentally as women, because of the culture that we're in and the way that we're educated and raised and all of the influence that's in our lives, we often don't consciously associate our sexual energy with power. We don't associate our vaginas with beauty, immensity, as being like a portal to, you know, the other dimension, you know, like that is not the paradigm that we're born into. We were born into a toxic patriarchal paradigm where it is shameful to be sexy and it is gross to be natural. And it is all of these things, right? And it is threatening. Here's the thing. It's threatening to men if we are fully embodied in our sexuality. Why? Because it's powerful. And so when we don't associate sex as power, there's like, and I don't mean power in the shadow expression, obviously. I mean it in like true, authentic, natural power, which is because it's creative life force. It is this like channel of that orgasmic energy, that eroticism, all of it is, it's this energy of creation. It is saying like, you know, I am the wild Shakti energy that creates everything that is. And so just to come into contact with that reality for yourself is like a big threshold moment for women, because there's so much of that that's actually, you know, I don't think largely we see our sexual energy as ours. We see it as for everyone else, because that's the way the world has been shaped, where it's like you have to be this way for the world. And so when you can feel what that energy means to you as a being and what it means to life itself, and really claim this, like fall in love with your power in that way, and start to hold sexual expression with that reverence that's like, this is so powerful and it's mine and nobody else can express it and feel it the way I can. And my sexual energy is mine to enjoy, you know. Then if you're feeling truly moved into sensual expression through dance or, you know, sexual relationships or sexual experiences, then you begin to start to cherish it and revere it in a way where you're doing it for you. And then if somebody else gets to enjoy that or partake of it, that's a gift. But your primary reason for allowing it to activate in you is for yourself. And that comes into self-love. So it's a really deep and magical and, you know, immense shift, I think, for women that's really, you know, probably going to be a long journey for many of us, because we just have so many years of programming where our sexual energy is for other and we are disconnected from its divine nature.
Yeah, I would agree. Even like self-pleasure, that's something that is so incredibly shamed. Like 100%, that's something that a lot of people struggle with. And it's interesting because I would say it almost, and I don't know, I don't have the statistics on this, and I haven't like literally gone around and taken a survey and been like, hey, how do you feel after you masturbate? But I would say it seems to me that it's kind of more accepted that it's something that men do every day or however many times a day, whatever. but not as much for women. And also, like, you know, just to take that like a little bit deeper too, there's so much sexual trauma on this planet. And that is such a huge part of, I think, relearning that self-love journey, and that it's okay to enjoy pleasuring yourself. Because I feel like if you've been violated in some way, what did you learn in that moment? You learned my body is not mine. So, I'm curious if you have some some tools that you could recommend. I know I've heard of mirror work, but you know, do you have like self-love tools or tools for healing sexual power? And
you know, I think for one thing, I mean, to be very candid, I am just recently, this whole new reclaiming of my body is a journey I am recently undertaking, in a more direct way. I had, you know, a lot of my tools leading up until this year were a lot more, you know, related to meditation and devotion and, creative practices and things of this nature. And really what's come online for me has been, you know, our body is the feminine, and that's true for men and women. Our physical form is feminine. The feminine is the body, and masculine is the consciousness. And so the body has so much intelligence and information in it, and it's impossible. You know, I've really started to connect to, it's impossible to fully heal from anything by only doing, you know, mental practices, because your body remembers and your body holds that memory. So you can tell you can read all the books about, you know, embodying sexuality and reclaiming your sexual power and all this stuff. And, you know, even some of the dancing, you know, there has to be this sort of deeper release. And for me, I mean, I just went and did an ayahuasca journey in September, at the very beginning of the month. That wasn't too long ago. And for me, one of my most astounding takeaways was I came there with the prayer of, I want to open my heart. Because in relationship, in intimate relationship, I still struggle with really stepping into commitment and making myself vulnerable through relationship with a man. And I came there with that prayer, and the medicine only worked in my body. It was all somatic release. It was all shaking and heaving and trembling and like purging through crying. And I could feel how my body had for years and years and years been in freeze mode. And so I was struggling with all of these things, like, you know, a caffeine addiction. I felt tired all the time. And it was like, aha, like energy is being taken up in holding and freezing and guarding physically on a completely unconscious level for things that had happened to me years and years ago, whether that was the car accident or sexual experiences and so forth. And so I'm pretty new to this, because it was my aha moment where it was like, oh, everything I've ever desired, all of the deepest intelligence that I have in me is actually going to come through my body as a woman, especially because this body is so feminine, and it can't come through me until I release and open this up. So I am really still, I'm standing like at the gates of this reclamation of my body and really recognizing how much, you know, animals, when they're in the wild and they get attacked by something, they immediately shake out that trauma and they move on. Mm-hmm. And they're, as human beings, we rationalize to ourselves not to do that because it's weird. And so one of the things that I saw in the medicine was new rule number one for me is let the body do whatever it wants to do. Moment to moment, it will know, it will, if that's like, we have to get into our bodies, so we have to allow it to, you know, like kind of be like, okay, maybe you want to do that. And like, maybe I want to dance. Maybe I want to scream, you know, but like from my gut and really like get into the rib cage and just starting to make that commitment to allow the body to do whatever it wants to do without going, no, that's weird. No, that's weird. Has been one step for me, and really just really making a new commitment of devotion to my body is really listening to, you know, what do you desire? What do you want? That was one of my takeaways for morning practice is before I do anything, ask the body what it wants. Don't tell it what it should do. You know, start to build a relationship of trust with your body, because if your body doesn't trust the world and your body can't trust you because you're never taking care of it and never listening to it, how can it soften enough to release the imprints of the experiences that you've had, you know, 2 decades ago? It's mm-hmm. never going to happen.
Yeah. And I think we get stuck as believing that more shadowy expression of ourselves is who we are. You know, mm-hmm. we begin to get so used to being in that place of like we were talking about earlier, feeling contained, that we almost identify with, oh, this is who I am, and not realizing how much we can shift things through changing first our body. And I like that you brought up shaking, because that's something that I did 40 days or almost 50 days of daily meditation practice with one of my spiritual teachers. And that was one of the things that we started with every single day was shaking. It's kind of like, I guess, like the Kundalini Osho shaking thing or whatever. Yeah. But it's so interesting, because if you try to sit down and all of a sudden your mind is, you know, racing, and then you're sitting there, you're thinking about your thoughts, you're judging your thoughts. Whereas if you like shake your body and move your body first, and then you sit down, even if you only shake for like 30 seconds or a couple of minutes, then you sit down and it's almost like your body just needed that energy to move through you so that your mind could kind of like settle in and get into alignment with your body.
100%. Yeah. You know, I studied Kundalini yoga. It was one of my first pursuits in when I realized, you know, I want to heal. I want to undertake my spiritual path and find my path of purpose. My first step was to practice Kundalini yoga and get certified to teach. And, so much of it was, you know, you realize that all of this yoga that we call yoga is actually, you know, it's preparation for the yoga that is meditation. Mm-hmm. And so, the movements, the kriyas that we call yoga are really a fundamental piece of getting the body to be able to be comfortable enough to come into stillness, but it has to move. It has to let that energy flow through. And, you know, on your last question, I actually went off track and forgot to answer some of the things, but movement for sure, like intuitive, you know, embodied movement, you know, like we've already talked about, is a great way to start to build that relationship with the body, allowing it to shake. You know, qigong, tapping, anything that's going to like really wake up the cells and let it know I'm here and I'm paying attention to you and I'm taking care of you. And breath work mm-hmm. is so healing. You know, the breath, just going in and kind of being that bellows to the deeper core tissue in your body that's really guarded, you know, all this like down your center line that you can't necessarily get to when you're doing yoga in that exact way. Breath work is another incredibly cathartic practice for starting to figure out where those pockets of protected emotion that exist from a long time ago are taking up residence and starting to bring some life into those spaces and open the door. It's such a door opener. And so you find a lot of, you know, a lot of emotion typically moving up when you go into expressive or ecstatic dance or breath work, and your body will show you something that's been there all along that you've been ashamed of and didn't even know, and has actually kept you from expressing fully, you know, for who knows how long.
Well, if you're uncomfortable in your body, your pain body, what do? You disconnect. Like that is a protective mechanism that you naturally go into, but long-term you don't want to remain in that disconnected place where you're like so uncomfortable. And I know that there's lots of different ways that, in my own life that shows up. Basically, since this last car accident, my diaphragm is like locked. It literally feels like I'm still wearing the seatbelt. And, like if I touch it, literally it almost makes me feel like I could throw up because there's so much energy stuck there. And you know, even in other ways too, like my acting coach years ago, one of the things that you learn when you're in acting class is all the annoying, weird things you do with your arms, your hands, your face that are not natural. You don't generally do that in real life. Or if you do, you've learned these things to take yourself out of deepening into the uncomfortable feelings of being a human and put yourself on the surface. One of them is, oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. And she was like, okay, Valley girl, like her, she would say this to me and like one of the other girls, she'd call us the Bobbsey twins. Cause you know, when you have that one friend and you can't help but talk like that with each other, cause you're so like, eh. Like, and it's a generational thing I think that we grew up with, but she was just like, stop talking like that. She's British. Stop talking like that. You sound like an idiot. And it's so funny because she's like, drop into it. And she'd come behind me and she'd grab me and she'd hit like my lower back. And she's like, drop into the feeling, like drop into it. Because, you know, that's one of the things that we often do. We disconnect. You learn, I can't express myself in certain ways. My life has taught me that I cannot express these, you know, heavier, darker expressions, which are valid and have a place. We get so set on, I have to be happy. I have to, you know, show up in the world in a certain way. So I'm now going to go through life on top of my feelings and kind of disconnected from the body. And what do you do when you're up here like this? You're not in your body. You're out of it.
Wow. Yes. I'm so happy you brought that up. I feel, this is so alive for me right now, is really connecting to, it's kind of funny to bring it up after talking about like the beauty of putting on, like there's a beauty to putting on the mask, but really when it's not a mask, for letting something be emergent through you that feels true, that's often confused with what's actually putting on the mask, which is often our persona. So we have like, we're so habituated into persona, which is how we express in a way that makes us feel safe and accepted, that we aren't even connected to what's true for us and what wants to be emergent. And there's so much of that, you know, you named some of it, like the anger, the rage, the ugliness, so to speak, you know, like what our truth really is some of the times is what we would call ugly. It's jealous. It is dark. It is pissed off. It is hysterical sometimes. And we don't give that permission. And the more that that's there and never gets to emerge, the more that the stronger the persona gets. And I love that you had a mentor that helped you recognize that, because it's it's so easy to just let it go into autopilot. And so much of our, you know, interchange with people is autopilot with the persona. And this has been a really profound awareness piece for me recently is getting to know the woman that, you know, I created this persona that makes me feel really comfortable 15, 20 years ago. And that just evolved, but it was persona. Who is the woman underneath? What's her natural expression? And I can feel that my proclivity with people is to be that bubbly, sweet, kind, the person that everyone loves, mm-hmm. the one that's adored. But what's true at my baseline is actually not that. What's my baseline is actually really grounded and calm and mature and maybe even somber sometimes, but I don't let myself drop into it. So, you know, as you put it, as your coach put it, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of gold there for us in our personal evolution to start to distinguish when we're going into persona and when we are really allowing ourselves to connect to what's true. And I think, we also can be a bit hard on the persona once we get there, because it's like, okay, well, that's fake. And maybe it's not fake. Maybe it's true for us sometimes. It's just about having enough awareness to recognize to ask ourselves what's actually true right now and allow ourselves to be that.
Absolutely. And observing when we're going into those places. And sometimes it's like, maybe it's just you and your girlfriend and you want to be bubbly and silly. Like that is totally an amazing expression. But then there's other times where it's coming in as a protective mechanism to cope with our uncomfortable feelings. And I know I do that with humor. I do think I'm pretty funny, but it has got me into so much freaking trouble.
I love you.
I say to my partner all the time, and I'm just like, I'm going to be a comedian. Like, I've always wanted to be a comedian. I'm going to be a comedian. Okay. And he's just like, oh my God. It's just like, but sometimes I've used humor and I will say something and it is inappropriate and not received. And people are shocked and not ready for it. And so then I'm like, okay, you know, making people laugh and, you know, expressing that goofy, silly side is great. But then there's also other times where, you know, for an example of my partner, I will pester him and just bug him relentlessly, being playful and silly. And then I'm like, okay, I'm desperate for attention right now. And this is coming across as so immature and juvenile. And he's clearly busy right now. And I'm, you know, throwing a sock at him or whatever it may be. So it's kind of like coming, I think, getting to know these different things that work through you and why and when they're coming through is so important, because sometimes it's good to express that ridiculous side of yourself walking through IKEA with your girlfriend, like I did last month, where you just are like, let's make this a really fun trip. And maybe not so much when you're in a different setting. And another one that I've noticed for me is if I'm really uncomfortable or I feel like I'm being judged, diarrhea mouth. I don't stop talking. I just blurt out so much stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, why did I just say that? And, you know, and like, you'll read the cues of other people. And I'm just like, oh my God, like they're already judging me. And now I'm literally just giving them tons of material to judge me some more.
Yeah, I think, you know, we all have our stuff, right? Like we all have our coping mechanisms. And I think one of the ways to something else to just pile onto all of these things to be aware of. No, but one of the ways to like neutralize some of the ways we get at odds with ourselves is to just keep in mind that as we track these things and we want to be more aware of them so we can be more embodied, so we can, you know, express and honor ourselves the way that we really, truly, deeply desire to, is that we have to also hold compassion for the parts of us that show up to protect us, you know, because if that's diarrhea mouth or, you know, or whatever, you know, it's like, that's intelligent actually. Like there's for at some point in our lives, you know, for me, if that was, you know, drinking way too much so I could feel more comfortable and be in, you know, in whatever expression, in the past or even recently, you know, I have that we get trapped in even more shame with ourselves when we're like, oh, you, that wasn't really true for you. And you just, you know, why did you do that? And like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Stupid.
You know, you did it again. Like, how much do we do that to ourselves, you know? And so like really taking some time to look at all of these expressions of selves, these aspects of our personas and stuff, and go like, okay, this doesn't necessarily serve me anymore, but it really has served me, because at some point in my life, I learned, because I'm intelligent, that this helped, that this felt either made me feel better, or it helped me feel more accepted, or, you know, it was some kind of adaptive strategy that actually helped me survive up until this point. And now every time that happens, I just notice it and I drop into a little bit of thank you again, part of me, for showing up to protect me. And I think I can, you know, I think I'm strong enough to do it this way. I think I'm strong enough to be vulnerable. And I love what you said about your partner, when you were like pestering him and you realized, you know, I just really want attention right now. Like sometimes the way, the pathway through that habituated, you know, expression is simply to have enough self-awareness to feel what's true and to be vulnerable and say, I don't have to act this way. I'm just going to say, hey, I really could use some attention right now, or, you know, for any of us, or like, I'm sad and I don't want to feel it. I'm uncomfortable here, right? Like how much would that build intimacy if instead of us being in an environment where, you know, like we feel judged or we're uncomfortable and we do something to make ourselves feel better, we just said to everyone around us, I'm feeling really uncomfortable. And, you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but, you know, like vulnerability creates intimacy and we all want that. And we're so afraid that we can't have it if we're who we really are, that we build up all these mechanisms to avoid the pain of that potential humiliation or rejection if we try to build intimacy with another person and they don't meet us there. And it's really wild, but it's such a shortcut that feels so hard when we can just say what's true in this really vulnerable way and allow ourselves to be met there.
Do you ever, like when you share something and you get really vulnerable, almost feel like, oh, did I share too much after, and kind of get almost like, cause I know I, you know, really honest, but then guess what I've heard so much of my life that I am too honest. And so I've kind of developed this like judgment of myself of sharing too much.
Really? Yeah. I think I've gotten pretty good at, speaking to it in the moment. Mm-hmm. So if I feel like I'm doing it, usually I'll catch it and I'll say something, but even that can be a deflective guard where it's like, oh, I'm probably saying too much, or am I saying too much or whatever? You know, there's almost like this, I'm going to say it before you think it kind of thing that like, that's kind of my, you know, I think a lot of us struggle with that. There's also people that struggle with not feeling like they put themselves out there enough at all, you know, and there's this whole turmoil inside, which is like, I really wanted to share something, but I didn't. And so we all have our own different levels of discomfort with this stuff. But ultimately, you know, I think, you know, I was on a call yesterday, I was talking about this actually, but there's something to be said for using your entire being and your perceptivity and like your heart energy to feel the space. And not everyone is ready to hear everything, And, you know, there's something to be said sometimes for that whole body listening that can feel, okay, like maybe this isn't the right time or this right relationship to say this. There's something to be said for that in certain situations. However, I personally really, really champion true expression. And if somebody else is uncomfortable with that, that's their edge. You know, if they can't handle hearing all about your truth, well, why? There's probably something in them. And that actually, when you fully express, when you don't hold yourself back, you know, you don't want to necessarily like stifle out another person, but when you don't hold yourself back, you actually give them a gift of finding their edge of either. Most of the time when you share a lot, when you express fully, you allow the other person to feel permission that they can express fully. And it's such a big gift to people. We're living in a world where people are, you know, trapped in shame and should. And so it's worth the gamble. Some people are going to be like, you know, you're too much. Well, that's because you're too much for them.
I've heard that so much.
That's where they are, mm-hmm. You know, but does that mean you should go back to, you know, you should hold yourself back so that they don't feel, you know, overwhelmed by your bigness? I say, hell no,
yeah.
Because it gives them the opportunity to feel why, you know, and why do certain things feel like too much? And the truth is we are really big, big expressive beings, because we are divine and are human, and our humanity is a portal to the divine, and the divine is infinite. And there's so much dynamicism in, available to us in our expression. So I think where we meet, you know, that sense of too muchness, you're often finding a place where another person hasn't given themselves permission to be as free. And when you express fully, you give them permission, even if it makes them uncomfortable. And that's a gift.
Yeah, I like that. Because I know when you're playing small, because you are afraid if people really see all that you are, that maybe love will be taken from you and maybe you won't be accepted. So often we don't express ourselves. We, you know, contain it. And if you have a really big personality, and you have a lot of feelings and emotions, which I will say, if you can express all of this like creative, high type energy, you also know how incredibly low you can dip as well. Like that's the thing with creative people. We can go really high, but we can also go really low. And to really be seen in that can be so scary and uncomfortable. But something that I've really, really been trying to work on in myself is that the cost of not saying how you feel or expressing your truth and standing in it is this, you feel so, you know, like you're kind of cheating yourself. There's like a certain sense of self-betrayal because you're playing by everyone else's rules and you can never please everybody. And if you try, you're always going to be putting yourself into this little container. So practicing in your mind, that, and it's kind of funny, like a mantra that, you know, I have tried and successfully adapted at different points when I feel insecure, you can rationalize, oh, this person I can tell is uncomfortable here. And that's their own insecurity projecting onto me and trying to contain me. But at the same time, if in your mind you feel that and you just say, I don't care what they think. I don't care what they think. I don't care what they think. And it's not because you should just be, you know, obnoxious and offend everybody around you and be like, I don't care what anyone thinks. It's more so a place of like, I'm expressing my goofy, silly side. I'm expressing this sexual side. I'm expressing all of these things. They feel good to me. Now I feel this judgment coming or this fear of that judgment. So I'm going to repeat over and over in my head that I don't care, because then it's not about anybody else's approval. It's just, this feels good for me. And that's it.
100%. Yeah. I love that. And you know, and even like, I think what that points to is this reorienting You know, a mantra could be, I love how I feel, no matter what anyone else feels. What matters most to me is how I feel. And when you can anchor in that, it's like, I feel how they feel, but I love how I feel. Like, you know, that's where we're not really, we're not tuned into that channel most of the time. We're like, if someone else doesn't feel good, then I don't feel good too. But we have that sovereignty to reorient to where we're setting the tone based off of how we feel with ourselves. But it does take practice. Like you just said, you said practice, it takes practice. We are up against, you know, years of our nervous system telling you like, you're not okay. Cause they're not okay.
Oh yeah.
So we have to work with our nervous system and our body and say, we're more okay when we don't care that much, not that we never care at all, you know, but like when we don't, when the most important thing to us is how we feel in ourselves. And so I love that as a practice, and it does take effort, you know? And I think, you know, to speak to, I'm sure when people, I know when a lot of people hear things like this, there can be a thought that's like, well, that's not realistic, you know, or that's not taking other people into consideration, but that, you know, there's always an opportunity for intimacy where you honor yourself and you check in with a person who seems to not feel comfortable or something like that. And just say, you know, do you feel uncomfortable? Is there anything, you know, you want to talk about? Is like, it depends on the relationship, obviously, but intimacy as a bridge is another really great commitment to hold in your medicine bag as you're stepping into your full expression. Is there's always something that can be spoken to that's actually going to bridge intimacy between people and still support you in your complete and total full expression.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was thinking also for you with, you know, speaking at Fit for Service in front of so many people, you know, and doing what you do, I can imagine that was definitely something like people will probably be like, oh, wow, Caitlin is just so naturally good at this. I bet it took practice.
Yeah. So to go, you know, I said earlier, I was a very shy little girl. That shy little girl is still inside of me right here. And every time I do anything regarding public speaking, she's in full panic mode. I'm holding her now as a grown woman. So it doesn't take over my entire being, but I can feel it. And it has taken practice, so much practice. You know, it has taken a lot of, like I said earlier, before I even got into the transformational space or started working in my path of service, I had years of, you know, adapting my shy nature, my social inhibition through going to festivals and putting on costumes and consuming substances and being like a, you know, a conductor of energy and building relationships. And I became hypersocial. So I practiced that way until that didn't serve me anymore. And I put myself in the discomfort of putting myself in new environments and trying new things over and over. And one of my big growth pieces was I remember I was working in Las Vegas in nightclubs, and I got the opportunity to, because I had a little bit of an acting background, to be a presenter and host for the World Series of Poker, but I knew nothing about poker. And so I go onto the floor day one of the World Series, and they're like, go, you know, go interview this guy and go do this. And I'm like, I was mortified. I did not know what I was talking about. I felt really embarrassed. And I realized at the end of the day, I was so embarrassed. I thought I did such a bad job. I did do a bad job, to be honest, but I went home and I thought, 6 weeks from now, when the World Series is over, this is not going to kill me. And I'm going to show up every single day and I'm going to give it the best that I've got. And I did it. And I finished the World Series, and I never thought they would call me again. And a few weeks later, I got invited to go to Montreal to cover another event. And it was, and I stayed at working in poker for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
But it took me showing up and putting myself in the fire of something I did not think I could do and did not, in a world I did not think I could be accepted in. And that shaped me enough to be able to, when I did find my path of purpose, get up with the shy little girl inside of me and stand in front of, you know, 150 or 200 people and speak, even though she's still terrified. But I learned, like, you're not going to die. Your nervous system may be telling you you're going to die. They're not going to accept you. They're going to judge you. Let them judge and show up anyway and show them what you've got and show yourself what you've got. And it changes everything. It's just that commitment, that practice really does change everything. And it's a journey, but it's worth it. And yeah, it's been a long road. And, you know, I will say also, one of the reasons I love writing is because I have this shy little girl inside of me. And so when I write poetry, you know, that's kind of like the place where I say everything that I'm too afraid to say. And that can be another incredible outlet for expression for all of us who are not quite like fully there yet, where it's like, I'm ready to say and do everything that's wanting to flow through me. Finding that creative outlet that is your place to be everything that you are is so healthy and important. And for me, you know, writing is still my doorway for all the things that I'm a little bit too self-aware to say in, you know, in person, in relationship, or in a social space. So that helps a lot too.
But that's where we grow. It's the experiences where we're uncomfortable and you push past it and you say yes to things anyways. You know, I think a lot of us, you know, we have this experience or this almost like expectation of who we're supposed to be. And yet deep inside, we always feel like there's got to be something more, or you see something in someone else and you're like, wow, like that's so amazing. I wish I could be like that. But we all have these really unique gifts and things to bring to the world and share, but it comes from putting yourself out there and being uncomfortable. And like I've said before, my first podcast, I cried after. I was like, oh my God, like, who am I? Like, what am I doing? Who am I to say anything about anything? And I just had so much, you know, insecurity about who I am in the world, because I saw myself as so insignificant. And I still am not, like, I feel quite humble in, and try to be humble in whatever it is that I do. But knowing that there's a unique way that you have in sharing that is going to open something in somebody else. And when you hold that in and you don't put yourself out there because you're so crippled by that fear, it's really not even about you at that point. Like, there is a, you know, you're doing a disservice to the world. Somebody needs to hear what you have to say. And something that came to mind for me in particular, like, I went through a terribly abusive relationship a few years back. And when I left that relationship, I could hardly express myself. I had so much fear and anxiety about sharing anything. And the day came, I had a friend call me and said, there is an event and there's a music video. It's at the art gallery and it's for bringing awareness to domestic violence. And you came to mind, do you want to give a speech? And before I could say no, I said yes, because I was like, I need to move through this and take my power back. So I wrote out a speech. I kind of presented it like a TED talk. And it was about 20 minutes long. And I didn't realize there was going to be about 300 people there, where I'm sharing like one of the most personal things I've ever been through in my life. But that day was like I felt a weight lift from me. And, you know, even just talking about it, I feel emotional, because there was parts of it where, you know, to put yourself out there and to say those things, and to let people know, you know, the depth of the experience that you've been through, that's so scary. But after I'm tunnel vision, my heart is pounding, you know, at one point I, like, my voice cracked because I almost started to cry, and I took a breath he pushed through it. And at the end, I had so many people that came up to me and were like, you described what I went through, and you getting up there was like me being able to see myself say all the things that I've never had the courage to say. And like, that's when I realized like so much of what we go through is not about us,
yeah.
You know? So I like goosebumps right now, you know,
I'm crying.
we don't know how we become an instrument, you know, like we don't like the things we go through in life. I really honestly feel like if we can get out of the, you know, my ex is the villain, and I'm the victim, and we move through it as that was something my soul needed to experience. And I want to be an instrument in some way. Yeah. And I just need to be open to how that's going to be and let it move through me.
Allow it. Yeah. It's so, God, I mean, you even sharing that with me without even sharing this story opened something up in my heart. And, you know, you're spot on. I love that as, you know, the instrument metaphor, because really that's what shame is getting in the way of, is allowing us to be an instrument for the perfect medicine that our life experience has given us. That mm-hmm. will benefit the world, and everything that we hold back because we're afraid of judgment, whether that's how we express or a story or a piece of art or a poem or just a vulnerable truth in a moment, is depriving the world of the unique medicine that you shaped to serve. And we, you know, the way you talked about how it's not about us, and we actually hold it back from the world is just so important. The ego is trying to protect itself with all the stories about how we're too small and it doesn't matter. And who are we to speak? And, you know, who are we not to, who are we to deprive the world of what we came here to give it, mm-hmm. you know? And when we can let ourselves trust, the only way sometimes though is to take that first step and share it, so we can realize that it's necessary. You know, every moment that I've shared something that was deeply shameful for me was the most impactful that I've ever been in life, period. And it was always the things I was afraid to say the most and do the most. And the world really needs it. It needs our truth.
And it also takes away the power that you've been giving to that thing that you've been allowing to sit in the shadow. It's not getting rid of it. It's like, you know, you're taking some of that power that you've been putting and placing over there on that thing, and you're bringing it back. Because when these experiences happen, it kind of fragments us. We leave parts of ourself behind. And you're in using your voice, you're calling it back, especially when we're ashamed. What do? We hold it in. We hold it in here. How about like when someone's yelling at you, or you've, and what do? You hold it in here, and you can feel that lump in your throat and wanting to express something. So whether you're writing something or whether you're speaking it out loud, and no one has ever heard that one story, but that one person hears you and sees you and receives what you're saying, you're step by step taking your power back mm-hmm. from those experiences. So,
yes.
And yes. If anyone's interested, it's not the best video, but my mom did take a video of that speech on an iPad. This is from a few years ago. I'll leave it linked to it in the show notes if anyone wants to listen to it. It's pretty raw and vulnerable, but again, it's not necessarily about being perfect at anything. It's about why you're doing something and the intention behind what you're doing and being of service. Which reminds me, I am going to join Fit for Service probably for, I think it'll be March or April. I want to come and do an in-person one.
Oh, yes.
I gotta do one.
Yeah, you have to. We'll make it happen for sure. You've got to come out. I'm actually headed off next week to Sedona for our third summit of the year. So it'll be our final summit. And it's such an extraordinary community. Everyone who's been in, it's been a beautiful ride, and I'm excited to meet more and more people every single time. I feel like the universe always brings the right people in at the right time, whenever everyone's ready. And it's just a beautiful intelligence to who shows up at any given moment, but it's a really fun community. I feel very honored to be of service to it.
Well, I feel like I've somehow in some way been slowly being, you know, like called in, you know, really.
Yeah, you're part of it already.
Well, like kind of,
you know, like we feel you, and your presence has been incredible. You know, you gave we did a beautiful contest for our members at the beginning of the year, and it's been so beautiful to be in relationship with you. And we need you there in person too.
Well, I definitely want to be there. And, you know, it's again, you know, I think maybe we can kind of wrap this up on intuition and why it's so important to listen to your intuition. And I will lead by saying how that even happened for me was quite a few years of feeling quite shut down and in sort of depression and, you know, self-judgment and feeling kind of like a loss of who I was since my accident. And, you know, chronic pain does affect the way you feel about yourself and the world. And I started teaching myself how to use Photoshop so that I could build graphics for my site. Then I was like, oh, I'm going to make some art. And then I had started following Vailana on Instagram. I didn't know her at this point, but I had seen a photo of her, and I just kept for about a month picturing this big sun behind her and this like collage art piece. And it kept coming up over and over, like a voice inside, an internal nudge kept saying to make this art. And I was like, that's weird. I don't want to come across as like, you know, like I start to have all these fears and judgment about like, do I need her permission? Anyways, so finally it just became so strong that I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to post it. I'm going to make it and I'm going to post it. And that was kind of how, and then I was quite surprised she had reached out to me. We kind of started talking, and then I made some more art, and then for her and Aubrey, and then it's just kind of trickled in. And I think to myself, you know, what would have happened if I ignored that nudge? You don't always know what's coming through you. And following that intuition, like we cannot ignore our intuition anymore. It's no longer about the mind. It's totally about what wants to come through you.
100%. You know, that actually connects back to what we were talking about earlier with how to, you know, reclaim your body from the paralysis of trauma and shame. It's like intuition is your body's intelligent guidance. So like, it's those things that we don't strategize that just come to us. And it's like, really? Like, I should do that. I want to do that, you know? And every time you show up to it and honor it, that channel gets a little bit stronger and it gets a little bit stronger. And then you start to learn, like, it's okay to actually put this first. And when I feel my intuition come online, and it's that like fluttering of the heart or the sensing of the gut or whatever sensation we feel when we have that guidance, if we can honor that, that's a big, you know, a big doorway into just reclaiming our feminine power in our body and getting rid of all the shoulds. Because if it's mm-hmm. always like, I'm going to honor my intuition, well, there's no should doesn't matter anymore mm-hmm. because intuition heart often doesn't go with should.
And sometimes it'll speak through your dreams too. That's mm-hmm. like, I feel like some people maybe on a conscious level are not able to feel the intuition as strongly. So, you know, maybe for somebody it's, you know, and this is kind of where it gets into like psychic stuff, which is a whole nother conversation, but are you hearing it? Are you seeing it in your mind? Are you hearing a voice? Are you, you know, are you feeling it in your body? Or maybe you're having these dreams, like, you know, that are telling you and speaking to you mm-hmm. about what's going on.
Yeah, totally. I dream pretty heavily, but I also feel it in my body as well. But I think I dream so heavily because I had overridden my body so much mm-hmm. that I kind of dampened that channel that's actually supposed to come through my body. And I love that you pointed that out as a tool. I think, like, I have a lot of people ask me about cultivating intuition. And one thing that I recommend for people who are, like, listening and feel like, I don't really understand that or know how, is to practice with small stakes choices where there isn't it's not a big deal which one you choose, and you don't have all that pressure on yourself. You can just ask your body, like, what's the first thing I feel before I start thinking about what the right choice is? And if it's small stakes, like what you're going to have for lunch, or, you know, pulling cards or whatever, like there's nothing writing on it, then we get out of that pressure of like, oh, you have to pick the right thing. And the mind doesn't need to come online and help you strategize as to why to pick whatever. So a lot of times it's by yourself. It's like, you know, what color am I drawn to? What direction am I drawn to, you know, go in my house right now? Just asking yourself these little questions that don't have a big, you know, a big effect can help you start to bridge that channel. Mm. And then you start to ask yourself, okay, what do I want when it counts a little bit more? And then it'll start coming to you more and more and more without you having to ask. You start to get to know what that feeling is inside of you when you ask yourself, okay, what do I want? What do I want? Like, just go with it. And you start, because a lot of us just don't recognize that feeling anymore, you know? Mm.
It's like a muscle. The more you flex it, the stronger it gets. Yeah, definitely. Well, you are absolutely delightful.
I love you.
Rainbow sister.
Our podcast feels like we met at a festival and then we sat down and had a really deep conversation and we walked away.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, maybe we've been at Burning Man all along.
Maybe.
I mean, that's on my list. Kate, is it true though? Are they like mandating any like weird stuff to be able to go to Burning Man anymore?
They didn't have it this year. This year was a renegade burn. So the actual Burning Man people didn't put it on. But it was just a free for all with nothing, nothing regulated. I just saw they announced yesterday that they announced the theme for 2022. It's called Waking Dreams. Ooh. To go back to your dream theme. Uh-huh. So I'm hoping that's alluding to them having another event next year, but I did hear this year that they were going to be compliant with mandates. And there was a lot of people were not happy about that. So I'm curious if that will last. You know, everything's kind of like the wild unknown mm-hmm. right now in so many ways, but Austin, Mayan Warrior is coming to Austin tomorrow. So we're having a mini burn here in Austin. So that's exciting. I'm really happy to see all these like smaller versions. People are starting to take it into their own hands and kind of spread the magic out throughout the world. So it's nice to see the creativity that's coming out of all of the limitation that we're navigating right now.
Definitely.
Costumes will prevail.
What's that?
Costumes will prevail.
Well, I'm looking forward to being able to come and partake in one of your ecstatic dances and, yes. you know, express my full spectrum of weird goddess vibes.
I did not wait. Get your full spectrum over here ASAP. Yeah.
Heck yeah. I want to say thank you. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, I think, you know, the easiest way to follow what I'm creating and offering is going to be on Instagram. I'm at the Poet Queen. And I also have a website, poetqueen.com, and you can find me in the Fit for Service community through aubreymarcus.com. And we have a beautiful community of people getting to know themselves better, creating community in this world, offering their passions and their hearts and doing all sorts of experiential transformational practices that help you heal and expand more fully into who you are. So anytime you're looking for something like that, you can find me in Fit for Service. I'm also occasionally hosting my own retreats and experiences as well. So I will keep you guys updated through Instagram and my website soon, coming soon. Yay. On the website. Yeah.
Well, keep me posted as well on the retreats. That would be awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to hit stop recording.
All right.